If you go ahead and open your Bibles to the book of Ruth, that's where we're going to begin our lesson today. Before we get started, though, I ask Ronnie Henderson to lead our minds in prayer. Yes, I do mirror the sentiments of Ronnie. I appreciate that prayer talking about the attributes of Ruth, because it was certainly a vast contrast than where we were just last week, talking about the last couple chapters in the book of Judges, talking about the Levite and his concubine and how he traveled to his father-in-law's home, which was Bethlehem of Judah, which is also going to be a backdrop for this story that we're in tonight, and how when they're traveling back from where he was there, he stopped in Gibeah and was treated certainly without moral scruples and certainly without kindness and welcoming in, because the men of Gibeah wanted to have intimate knowledge with him and his servant, but instead the Levite left his concubine out, and the old man's also left his daughter, but we don't hear anything in the chapters about his daughter. So we see the territory of Bethlehem and Judah, Gibeah, and that trail or that path, that trade route that went all the way up to the hill country where we find the Levite and the concubine. In chapter 20, we see how the Levite had sent the pieces of that concubine to the rest of the tribes, and they sent it out, and the tribe of Benjamin was not going to give up the men who did this immoral act. In fact, we're going to be defiant, even defiant to Jehovah. Even in odds of 400,000 to 26,700 men, they still were going to be defiant. And Israel told them, hey, all we need to do is you give us those men. Nope, we're not going to do that. But the Benjamites thought that, hey, look, God's with us. We defeated them twice. We defeated Israel twice. And so we're going to do that a third time. But that didn't go so well for them. And they were down to a small remnant of only 600 that fled away from where they were out into some caves to be away from utter destruction in Rimmon. Excuse me. And then, of course, in the last chapter of the book of Judges, how all the rest of Israel were angered at Benjamin. So we're going to take this. So none of our wives or none of our daughters or any of our female spouses or family are going to be given to the tribe of Benjamin to be wives. And they thought they did that hastily, because later they grieved their brothers and they thought, how can we get wives for this remnant? We don't want to be without a tribe. We don't want to see the nation of Israel without one of its tribes, even if they were immoral at the time. So they looked for some way to help them out, and they went back to Jabesh Gilead and destroyed them, because they didn't come to the meeting that everybody was required to do. And so they took 400 of the virgins from that town and gave them to the men of Benjamin, but there were still a few left, and they still needed to help them out. So they said, hey, do this, you know, when there's this big shindig where the young virgins would come out and dance, and go ahead and take what's left over. And if the sons or their brothers or their fathers came and complained, we would we would make it all right and smooth things over. So we were talking about mostly on the other side of the Jordan, but Jabesh-Gilead was on the other side of the Jordan, just to get our perspective of where we were at that time. And so the last two stories in the book of Judges showed how corrupt, how immoral they were, because in those days Israel had no king. And everybody in the last verse did as he saw fit. And apparently there was no compass, even though God had given them the compass. And you're thinking, okay, all is lost. You know, Israel is not going to be found faithful in God's eyes. And then we get to the book of Ruth, and we see it's a vast setting. It's different. And we're going to see that they started in Moab. We're going to see an intimate story of a family, a woman who had a husband and two sons, and the sons got married, and then they were gone. It shows a period of peace, though, between Israel and Moab, which is in a vast contrast when we looked early in the book of Judges. So let's turn to Judges chapter 3. And we remember that was when we're in the period of Ehud is the judge. But Eglon was the king of Moab, and he was not very good or very nice to Israel. And we start in verse 12. Now, therefore, take you 12 men out of the tribes of it. Did I do that right? Yeah, I was reading out of Joshua. That's not the same book. I was like, that didn't seem right. Okay, one book more. Judges chapter 3. Okay. That's where the children of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of Jehovah. Jehovah strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done that which is evil in the sight of Jehovah. Now, he oppressed Israel for 18 years. And we remember the story of Ehud. You know, he was left-handed and he had a knife and he plunged it in his battle. But we didn't have a very good relationship between Israel and Moab. But now in this story, in the book of Ruth, we see they have a much better relationship, because they said the family who was in Bethlehem and Judah, they went there because there was a famine there. And we see the time period, right? It shows accounts of a young daughter-in-law's faith and trust in her mother-in-law, a bond of love between these two women. We see that even though she was told to leave, she stays with her mother-in-law. We see Naomi go through periods where she feels full. She has a husband. She has two sons. And then they're going to get married. And her life is full and complete. And she thinks, you know, what happens after my sons get married? Well, I'm going to have grandchildren. And certainly my quiver will be full then. And so we see these stories kind of intersect. And what's going to happen with the nation of Israel? What is going to be like? You know, we see these other things of rash and immoral people. But there is still hope for the nation of Israel, because they do have people that are still doing what God asked, still acting like that toward each other, and showing selfless devotion in the port of Ruth toward Naomi. And then we think of, okay, when did this book occur? When was the time period? You know, we had a little glimpse as to when the other verses were, we thought, early in the Judges period. And now we see in the last part of Ruth that she's included in the lineage of Christ, as Ronnie told us. And she is the great-grandmother of King David. And so we know at the end of Judges, we start into the period of the United Kingdom, and we see Saul, and then shortly thereafter, we see David. So we look at to when she was around. When did this time period occur? And what a contrast that a woman from Moab, not born directly in the nation of Israel, demonstrates God's love toward Naomi, but God's love toward God's people even, and how respectful she was to their ways and the things that were happening. So in the beginning of the book, we see that Naomi and her husband and her two sons left Bethlehem and Judah and went to sojourn in the country of Moab. Because why? Because there was a famine in the land. Verse 1. And then the man, his name is Elimelech, the name of his wife, Naomi, and their two sons. And they came into the country of Moab and continued there. And in verse 3, we see Elimelech dies. But she's still full. She still has two sons. And while they're there in Moab, both her sons take women from them. And they're married. Well, you know, remember God had told his people, hey, you can't marry any foreign people. But Moab was really a descendant from Lot and his youngest daughter. And we saw that in Genesis 19. And we even talked about that when we were earlier in our period of the invasion and conquest, when they talked about going around and not attacking the Moab people because they were part of your relatives and related. But we saw that in Genesis 19:37. So from Lot and his relationship with one of his daughters becomes the tribe of Moab. So they are related. So it wasn't forbidden to go there. We see the location where they were was in the hill country, and it was, you know, at the time when they when you don't have famine, it's very fertile. You can grow a lot of vegetables and feed your family. So they wanted to then travel around the edge of the Dead Sea and down past the tribe of Reuben into Moab, where they can find sustenance for their family. Now, in verse 5 of chapter 1, they had been there in Moab for 10 years, and both Ruth's sons pass away. They die. They don't tell us how her husband died. They don't tell us how their sons died, but they both passed away. And then she arose and she said, well, what's to hold me here now, right? I might as well go back to my native country. And then she arose, verse 6 says, and her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab that now Jehovah had visited his people in giving them bread. Now God continually burdens Israel because they fall away. But when they come back to him, he restores them. He brings them back up, their kneading bowl, their food, their crops, their things that they have sustenance. So it's a time of peace between Israel and Moab. It's also a time where prosperity has come back into the land. Well, she prepares to go back to Moab, and then she decides, well, it's probably better that these two young women that had husbands stay in this country to find husbands. And she said to her two daughters-in-law, go return each of you to your mother's house. Jehovah deal kindly with you as he have dealt with the dead and with me. So she obviously thought both of them were very good wives to their sons. She wanted nothing but the best for them and to return back to their mother's area, their home, or their countryside so that they may have full lives and that God may grant them a chance to have another husband. But they're not going to be able to do that with her, she thought, because she, you know, in the nation of Israel, remember the lineage, if you have a son that dies, then the younger brother would then raise that wife and he would keep that inheritance. But she has no more sons. And she tells him, I'm old in years. You know, is there any reason for me to have a husband and you stay until I have more children so I can have a son? You should go home. You should go to your family. And Naomi in verse 11 turned again. My daughters, why will you go with me? Yet I have sons in my womb that may be your husbands. Turn again, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. Now, I'm not sure what age that is, but she thinks she's too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you therefore tarry with me till they're grown? So you need to leave. I have no reason for you to come with me now. And she says, they lifted up their voices and wept and kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. Ruth stayed. Ruth wanted to show her devotion. You've been with me. You've been my mother-in-law. You are my family. Where you go, I go. And you know, you think of that mother-in-law role, and I keep thinking back to my mother-in-law, you know, how gracious she was to her, to me, and patient and nurturing. And Ruth wanted to be that and be part of that. Because we didn't know what the future was going to hold. We had no idea. They're going to go back to Bethlehem. She has no idea what's going to happen with her. She's not really in the nation of Israel, but she tells Naomi, hey, your people are my people. Your God is my God. I am following you. I am following you and being with you. Don't send me away. Oh yeah, we know in that period of time there was a lot of pagan gods in Moab. Yes.
But it was in this family.
Yes.
Even though Ruth and Naomi obviously wasn't, but
right. Yeah, no, that was good. That it's like, okay, she's going back to her family and her gods, but Ruth says that thy people shall be my people and thy God my God, in verse 16, yes. And what will the future hold? Naomi's not sure. Ruth isn't sure. But Ruth knows she's going to travel with her mother-in-law, and she's going to be with her. So the two went out, and they came to Bethlehem. Remember where Bethlehem was. It was up and around, you know, the Dead Sea. So they didn't have necessarily an easy travel, and it wasn't going to be just a day travel. It's going to take a little bit of time on foot. And when the two went until they came to Bethlehem, verse 19, they were come into Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And the women said, is this Naomi? So they did recognize her. It had been a while. You know, she said it had been 10 years since her sons died. It's been a while since she'd been gone. But the whole town of Bethlehem knew Naomi, recognized her. Is this Naomi? Well, she didn't want to be known as Naomi anymore. She thought she was afflicted. God was against her. Jehovah was against her. She thought. And she wanted to be called? Yeah. For the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. But we'll find at the end of the book, she has a different tune at the end when she holds her grandchild. And she believes that Jehovah had afflicted her. But now here she is, because she says, I went out full. I had a husband, I had two sons, and Jehovah hath brought me back again empty. Why shall ye call me Naomi, seeing Jehovah hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned out of the country, out of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of the barley harvest. Remember when they did the invasion and conquest, every tribe, every clan, every family had their inheritance. So even though they were gone from the country, they still had their inheritance in that town. So even though her husband wasn't there, she still had a claim. She still had an inheritance. She still had a place to go to. Now, some of the titles in some of your books say, Ruth meets Boaz. But as we follow the story, it seems Boaz sees Ruth first. Who is that woman? Right. I need to inquire of that. Right? It's a time of the barley harvest. A time of plentiful things. We know that God was blessing them at the time because they had an abundance. And when they had an abundance, they were told certain things to do. Let's turn back to Leviticus chapter 19. Verses 9 and 10, and tells them about the landowners, what they should do when they have abundance, and when they were harvesting. So, chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field, neither shalt thou gather the gleaning of thy harvest, and thou shalt not glean thy vineyard, thou shalt gather the fallen fruit of the vineyard. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am Jehovah your God. So they are still following God's practices, even in Leviticus 23:22, it restates that same thing, that they are supposed to leave the things that gather those. If they fall out of your hands or your group, those are left on the ground. Leave those open for people that are traveling and those that don't have land of their own, the poor. And when ye reap the harvest of your land, thou shalt not wholly reap the corners of thy field. Neither shalt thou gather the gleaning of thy harvest. Thou shalt leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. I, Jehovah, am your God. And it also restates the same fact in Deuteronomy. So Ruth was there at the time of the harvest. She went to this particular field. Now, we think things of our life and our past of our life, somehow we get directed in certain things. How did I go from Fort Lauderdale to Tallahassee and work at a hospital and met this woman who was a nurse working in the hospital? Stephen Clarity, this woman. How does God somehow direct our feet and chances? Because this was a chance. You know, Ruth wasn't told to go to this field. She just happened to go to this field. It happened to be Boaz's field. She started working because she knew, hey, I have to provide for me and my mother-in-law for food. We don't have, you know, a vineyard and workers and stuff, so we have to do that. So we think of the God's hand and how, in verse 3, and she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap was to light on the portion of field belonging unto Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. And who was Elimelech again? That was Naomi's husband, right? So a kinsman in some text, some say near kinsman in other verses as we go. But he was a relation to them. She had no idea who that relation was. She had no idea. But she was there gleaning the field. And then in verse 4, Boaz, who is the landowner, behold and saw those who were reaping. And he says, what? Jehovah be with you. God be with you. Blessed be to you. And they answered him, Jehovah bless thee. So obviously they had enough left over to take to their families. He had enough abundance that he could harvest that and get money from that and support his family as well. And then Boaz sees this woman. You know, like I said, some of the texts say Ruth meets Boaz. Boaz said, who's that woman? Who's that woman? I haven't seen her in the town before. She seems to be very busy at work. And whether the servant said, oh, she came with Naomi from Moab, and she's been out here working. She's been very diligent. And she said, let me glean, I pray you, and gather after the reapers, in verse 7, among the sheaves. So she came forth and hath continued even in the morning until now, save that she tarried a little in the house. So she's been working from early morning until this time now. They don't tell us what time of the day, but it's obviously after probably a noontime meal or a mealtime where they had a rest period. And the servants were like, she's a worker. Boaz was very interested to find out who she was and be introduced. And Boaz makes provisions then. And then Boaz turned to Ruth and said, hearest thou not, my daughter? Go not to glean in another field. Neither pass from hence, but abide here fast by my maidens. Let thine eyes be on the field that they do reap, and go thou after them. Have I not charged the young men that they shall not touch thee? So you're going to be made sure that you can glean in my fields. We're going to watch over you. I'm going to make sure the young men know and understand that you're here and you can do that. And how did she react to Boaz's kindness? In verse 10, she humbled herself. She said, thank you very much. She showed respect to his kindness. So he showed kindness to her and she showed reverence and kindness to him. Because he could certainly have said, hey, you're not coming here anymore. You're not part of our tribe. You're not part of the Israel nation. You're an outsider. But he made sure that she was treated and also watched over and made sure, okay, I heard you're helping to make sure you get food for Naomi and yourself. You're not just doing this for you. And verse 11 and 12, Boaz answered and said unto them, "It hath fully been shown me all that thou hast done unto thy mother-in-law since the death of thy husband, and how thou hast left thy father and thy mother and the land by their nativity, and art come unto a people that thou knowest not. Jehovah recompense thy work, and a full reward be given thee of Jehovah, the God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to take refuge." And that kind of goes back to the New Testament. Remember when Jesus had told them that he wanted to be like the mother hen, right? And protect his people. In Matthew 23, verse 37, it talks about, hey, as a mother hen would gather her chicks, I want to spread my wings and cover you. Boaz says the same thing. God wants to protect you. You have shown kindness. You have shown respect. You have shown that you are of God's people. And using that nature, you're using that nature that you would work hard in the noonday sun and that you weren't doing it just for yourself, that you were doing it for you and your mother-in-law. Well, Ruth continues to work hard, continues to glean until the end of the day. Boaz continues to help her, and as she needs food, he tells her to come eat with the maidens that I have provided for. Come, let us give you bread. Let you dip your bread in the morsel of vinegar, in verse 14. And she sat beside the reapers, and they reached, and they gave her parched grain, so grain cakes that they passed to her, and she did eat, and she was sufficed. And we said, you know, it sounded like she had leftovers, because she didn't eat at all. She kept some, so she, hey, I ate till I was satisfied, and I'm going to take some back to Naomi to make sure she's also provided for. And when she had risen up to glean, Boaz commanded his young man, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and reproach her not. And also put some out for her from the bundles, and leave it, and let her glean, and rebuke her not." So even some of the bundles we're going to put aside for her, because she's got another mouth to feed. She's got a mother-in-law that she needs to take care of. Hey, make sure you put enough aside. And he knew that she was related to his family. So I'm going to provide for her. What a nice story compared to where we had been. And we see both parties, Ruth and Boaz. And we see those around her, even his men, Boaz, his field hands, even the maidens around here treated her with respect and brought her in. And then, of course, Naomi is amazed. Wow, look at all this that you've gotten. Where did you get this from? Where did this come? It says in verse 17, she had an ephod, which is like 20 to 25 pounds worth of grain. That's a whole bunch of grain. She said in verse 18, Ruth says, and she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw where she had gleaned, and she brought forth and gave to her that which she had left after she was sufficed. And her mother-in-law said unto her, "Where hast thou gleaned today, and where hast thou wrought? Blessed be he that gave you knowledge of thee." And he showed her mother-in-law with whom she had wrought, and said, "The man's name with whom I wrought today, or worked, is Boaz." So Naomi knew, and Naomi said to her blessed daughter-in-law, "Blessed be of Jehovah, who had not left off his kindness to the living and the dead. Because Naomi said unto her, the man is nigh of kin unto us, one of our near kinsmen." And also in some of the versions it says, redeemer kinsmen. A New International says that. And so redeemer kinsmen, one of those relatives that could help them. And also remember, she is of marrying age. And the lineage goes, if she had, if there was a son of Naomi, he would take her to be his wife, so their inheritance wouldn't go away. Well, if there's no person of that, if there's no near kinsman or there's no immediate relative, it kind of moves down the chain. And Boaz was one of that lineage that could happen to. And so she told her after she had done gleaning, hey, you want to keep going back there? Keep going back there because he is part of our family. He's part of our kinsmen. He's part of the people that we're related to. And then Ruth said, yea, he said unto me, that thou shalt keep fast by the young men until they have ended all my harvest. And Naomi said unto her, Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it is good, my daughter, that thou shalt go out with his maidens, and that they meet thee not in any other field. So don't go anywhere else. You need to keep going back to that farm. You need to keep going back to those fields, because he's going to provide for you. So it says she did. She kept fast by the maidens of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and of the wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. And so we talked about the near kinsmen and the rules of that. And let's turn to Numbers 27. Numbers 27, verses 9 through 11. Numbers 27, 9 through 11. Let's move up to verse 8. And thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel, saying, if a man die and have no son, then he shall cause an inheritance to pass unto his daughter. And if he have no daughter, then he shall give his inheritance unto his brethren. Does anybody else have relative or kinsmen besides brethren? And if ye have no brethren, then ye shall give his inheritance unto his father's brethren. And if his father have no brethren, then ye shall give his inheritance unto his kinsmen. And that he is next to him of his family, and he shall possess it. And it shall be unto the children of Israel a statute and an ordinance, as Jehovah commanded Moses. So we're at this point where we found Ruth with her mother-in-law, traveled from Moab, left her mother and father and the gods of Moab to be with Naomi, coming back to Bethlehem, where she was not sure how it was going to go or what the future held. By happenstance, or God's providence, she was guided into Boaz's field. She was able to get enough to sustain her and Naomi. Boaz then showed kindness unto her, and she also showed kindness and respect back to him, that he wanted her to continue gleaning in his field, and he made sure provisions were made that she could get that extra provisions. Naomi was glad that that was part of the kinsmen. We see that we have the nation of Israel following the rules that Jehovah had said. He had told them, if you have plenty, then you should make sure plenty is left over, or those that are in need can have some. And so we see all the rules are lessons we can take away from it. God will change someone's heart. God will leave a path if we're following Him and dedicated our lives to Him. Naomi said she came back in despair because God was against him. But things fell into play where Ruth found Boaz's fields. Boaz was a relative of theirs, where he could then take care of Ruth. And Ruth continued on as we follow the story. Next week we're going to go into Ruth chapters 3 and 4. We're not going to cover it. We're going to take that break tonight. But we see what wonderful lessons of the natural caring, the love that was shown for Ruth toward her mother-in-law, Naomi. Naomi, who was in despair, is starting to have hope again. The Boaz who meets Ruth or sees her, gives kindness and attention to her. And then Ruth herself showing the humbleness and the recognition that he was someone that was providing for them. And then even the things that she had taken in, she had food. She made sure her mother-in-law had food. And she brought all that back to her mother-in-law so that she can also be sustained. Well, I thank you again for your kind attention. Ruth is a really good and nice story. And we'll finish chapters 3 and 4, Lord willing, next week. Thank you.